Chapter 3, Axion T4, Implementation and Resistance. The imposing classicist-style villa on Berlin's Tiergartenstrasse 4 was originally owned by a Jewish family, the Liebermanns. Hans Liebermann Sr., a successful textile manufacturer, had bequeathed the residence to his son, Hans Jr., in the 1920s. Hans Jr. committed suicide after the anti-Jewish violence of 9 and 10 November 1938, known as the November pogroms, or by the infamous Nazi term Kristallnacht. After this, the villa was confiscated by the SS Main Economic and Administrative Office, and in the summer of 1939 became the site of a bureaucratic process that would facilitate the murder of more than 200,000 people. Following Adolf Hitler's authorization to Karl Brandt and Philippe Bouleur, head of the KDF, to commence the euthanasia program in October 1939, the Ministry of the Interior sent registration forms to hospitals and nursing homes across the German Reich. An accompanying leaflet specified which types of patients were to be reported. Specific criteria requiring reporting on certain medical conditions, the duration of the patient's stay in the institution, criminal history, employment history, and current work capacity. Jewish patients, or those of foreign citizenship, were to be registered regardless of their clinical status. The completed registration forms were returned to the administrative headquarters for the euthanasia program, which had been established at the stolen Liebermann home at Tiergartenstrasse 4, leading to the now notorious codename Axion T4, or Operation T4. The planning and implementation of the Krankenmorde was carried out by Hitler's Chancellerie, Kanzlei des Führer, or KDF, in close cooperation with the Ministry of the Interior. In the summer of 1939, the KDF began the systematic registration of disabled newborn children and infants as a precursor to the program of Kindereutanasie, meaning children's euthanasia. At the same time, KDF functionaries prepared for an organized campaign of murder of certain groups of adult patients in German hospitals and care institutions. The killing operations were to be performed in specially equipped Tötenanstalten, meaning killing centers, using carbon monoxide as the killing agent. The decision of whether the identified patient lived or was to be killed fell to a committee of medical assessors known as Gutachter, at the medical office of Tiergartenstrasse 4. Around 40 of Germany and Austria's most respected physicians and psychiatrists had been recruited for the task of assessing and selecting victims. So large was the number of assessments that the committee was divided into a committee of junior assessors, known as Untergutachter, whose work was overseen by more senior and experienced assessors, Obergutachter. The T4 Medical Committee was hidden behind a fake organisation, the Reich Cooperative for State Hospitals and Nursing Homes, Reichsarbeitgemeinschaft Heil- und Pflegeanstalten, or RAG. All correspondence or documents related to the T4 Medical Committee was sent to the RAG. Each life or death decision was based on the defined but limited information provided on each individual registration form known as Meldebogen 1, completed by the patient's doctor and sent to the T4 committee in combination with a review of the patient's medical file. No victim of the T4 program was examined in person by the committee as part of the selection process. On the T4 forms, a panel of three experts would insert a symbol determining plus, meaning death, minus, meaning survival, or question mark, meaning the decision was referred back to the patient's doctor. For a patient to be selected for death, the form required three plus marks. The question mark that appeared on Elvira Hempel's form, which spurred her from the gas chamber at Brandenburg Killing Centre, would likely have come from this committee. The primary criteria for the T4 selectors in determining life from death was a person's work capacity, although other considerations such as curability or whether a person had regular visitors may have been a factor in their deliberations. Patients condemned to death were then recorded in transport lists which ensured they were located and escorted to the killing centres. From spring 1940 onwards, The victims were sent via various intermediate institutions called Zwischenanstalten, meaning intermediary institutions, enabling the regime to better organize and conceal their activities. A fake organization, Gemeinnütziger Krankentransport, GmbH, meaning charitable ambulance, or GECRAT, was established within the T4 apparatus, tasked with transporting the victims to the killing centres. GECRAT made use of buses to transport victims, usually vehicles retired from the postal service that were then painted grey. On arrival at the killing centres, the victims were directed to undress and were then photographed and examined by a euthanasia physician. The victims were usually told they were to take a bath or a shower. Once they were locked inside the gas chamber, carbon monoxide would be released from the external cylinders into a pipe system inside the vault. As the gas was odourless, the victims usually had no sense of what was about to happen. After a short period, some lost consciousness and then succumbed. Others panicked, screamed, or rushed for the door as they struggled to breathe or realised they were dying. The euthanasia physician could observe through a peephole in the gas chamber door whether all of the victims had died and, if so, the gas would be siphoned out of the space. Assistants called Leichenbrenner, meaning corpse burners, then removed the bodies and cremated them in an adjacent crematorium. A victim's family would later receive a bogus death notice with a false statement of death citing natural causes such as appendicitis or pneumonia. Families often received an urn with non-specific ashes that were taken from the crematoria in the killing centres. From January 1940 to August 1941, more than 70,000 people were killed with carbon monoxide in the gas chambers of the six Axion T4 killing centres. Most of the people murdered in this phase of the Krankenmorde suffered from schizophrenia. Of those victims, most were women. Compared to male victims, the fate of women referred to the T4 committee was more influenced by their reduced capacity for work. Among those murdered in the Krankenmorde were people who had neither physical nor psychiatric illnesses or disabilities, but who were either convicted felons, alcoholic or drug addicted, work shy, or classified as antisocial or psychopath. When it came to children, it was their perceived ability to learn that primarily determined their survival. Emil B. was a 66-year-old married man who had lived in Stuttgart with his wife and family. We know little of his personal or family life, other than he worked as a piano technician with no previous health or legal problems until the period just prior to his admission to hospital. From early 1939, Emil began to suffer significant deterioration in his mental health, and in late August 1939, he was taken by ambulance to the Bürger Hospital in Stuttgart, complaining of worsening memory loss, speech problems, and increasing agitation. He had likely developed cerebral sclerosis, meaning vascular dementia, from a series of strokes. Due to bed and funding shortages at the Bürger Hospital, Emil was made a ward of the state in mid-September 1939 and admitted to the Christophsbad Asylum in Göppingen, near Stuttgart. On arrival at Christophsbad, Emil was disorientated, agitated, and suspicious. His clinical file indicates he was frequently incontinent of urine and tended to wander the wards at night. He was soon transferred to the agitated ward. Emil's doctor noted that his answers to questions were limited to one or two words and tended to be repetitive or perseverative. When put to work in the hospital's workshop, Emil proved incapable of productive activity and often urinated under the workbench. Clinical entries by nursing staff indicated he could be trained only in very basic tasks. One such note uses the phrase dreisieren, a term used when describing the training of an animal. The last few months of Emil B.'s file do not record any clinical intervention or meaningful observations, perhaps indicating both that his prognosis for any form of recovery or work capacity was exceedingly poor and that his doctors had lost interest in his case. In mid-October 1940, Emil was placed on a GECRAT transport and transferred to the hospital at Winnenthal, one of the Zwischenanstalten transition centres. He was murdered in the gas chamber of the Grafeneck killing centre soon after. Although not documented in his file, It is likely that Emile B's family received a bogus death certificate with a false natural cause of death, as was the case with thousands of other victims. To progress and legitimate its program of elimination of the sick and disabled, the Nazi regime utilized propaganda coordinated through the Rassenpolitisches Amt der NSDAP, Office of Racial Policy, the RPA. The RPA produced a monthly publication, Neues Volk, meaning New People, which was widely distributed in the community. The magazine published a series of images throughout the 1930s depicting residents of asylums and nursing homes as physically grotesque, pathetic, and expensive to keep alive. One image from a 1938 edition depicts a man with cerebral palsy on a chair and supported by a strapping young Pfleger, meaning male nurse. The image and caption, 60,000 Reichsmarks, what this person suffering from hereditary defects costs the people's community during his lifetime. Comrade, that is your money too, poses the seemingly straightforward answer to a worrying dilemma in society. In the contest of morality and biology, it suggests the community is best served by economic rationalism. And yet, in reducing human life to an economic cost, the Nazis were oblivious to the implementation cost of their eradication program within the larger scope of their war endeavors. Apart from publishing Neues Volk, the RPA applied numerous other strategies to enhance public support for its eugenic policies. The Ausstellung Entartet Kunst, meaning degenerate art exhibition, that toured Germany in 1937, had exhibited condemned works of modern art such as those by Jewish painters Marc Chagall and Vasily Kandinsky. The RPA ordered that drawings from asylum patients be placed alongside those of Jewish artists, intending to equate the diseased mind of the mentally ill with the degenerate Jewish or Bolshevik modern artist. The RPA also produced films to encourage public support for the discriminatory aims of the Nazi regime. In 1936, it commissioned the production of a silent film, Erbkrank, meaning hereditary illness. The film juxtaposes grotesquely constructed images of asylum patients, often utilizing light projected from below to distort appearances. It begins with a frame stating, "What casualness and frivolity have destroyed, what thoughtlessness and lack of conscience have handed down, is protected and cared for here." A year later, a sound film sequel, Opfer der Vergangenheit, Die Sünde wider Blut und Rasse, meaning Victims of the Past, the Sin Against Blood and Race, was released in cinemas across Germany. Prominent American eugenicist Harry Lochlin was so impressed with the impact of the film that he attempted to arrange for an English subtitle version to be released in the United States, although there was no record of any public screenings of the film there. In 1941, by which time nearly 70,000 adults and children with disabilities had been murdered, a final propaganda movie on the euthanasia topic, Ich klage an, meaning I accuse, was released in German cinemas. Karl Brandt, who was to become one of the Nazi officials most responsible for the Krankenmorde, had suggested to propaganda minister Josef Goebbels that a more sophisticated message needed to be communicated to revive community support for state-implemented euthanasia. Goebbels worked with a mainstream film director, Wolfgang Liebeneiner, who had been a member of the Prussian State Theatre and later the artistic director of the German Film Academy in Babelsberg. Due to a growing public awareness of and resistance to the euthanasia program, the Nazi regime now changed its approach. Through the release of Ich klage an, the Nazi regime tried to manufacture consent for the mass murder of the sick and the disabled by carefully positioning the morality of the murder process with an end-of-life decision-making dilemma in the case of a terminal illness. The screenplay for Ich klage an was an adaptation of the novel Mission and Conscience by Helmut Unger, a Berlin ophthalmologist who later worked in the euthanasia program selecting patients for death. Produced by Tobis Films, Ich klage an's plot revolves around the story of a neuroscientist's wife who experiences the onset of a rapidly progressive form of multiple sclerosis. Fearing she will suffer an undignified death, she begs a family friend, who is also a physician, to administer a fatal overdose of medication. Constrained by his sense of Hippocratic duty to do no harm, the doctor resists, leaving the woman's husband to administer a lethal cocktail to her in a scene that depicts the killing as a tender act of love. When later brought before the court, the woman's husband passionately defends his actions as a mercy killing. His pleading that it is unnatural to prolong life in all circumstances, and that it is a dutiful yet compassionate act to end suffering through a mercy death, were crafted to support the Nazi regime's argument for a lawful form of euthanasia to be a state-administered process. According to reports from the Sicherheitsdienst, SD, the Intelligence and Security Service, Ich Klage An was enthusiastically and well received, even by some within the Protestant and Catholic churches. Many who saw the film at the time reportedly responded in favour of euthanasia if it was offered as a solution to chronic suffering. From general responses to the SD's questions, the major substantive concern expressed by viewers was unease at the prospect of legalised euthanasia becoming an administrative or legal decision rather than a medical one. For the most part, German audiences did not seem to readily connect or agree with the central narrative of Ich Klage An and the pleadings for a state-supervised euthanasia program. Where they did, such as audiences from cinemas in Münster and Passau, the film was regarded poorly. While there may have been some sympathy in broader German society for the idea of Gnadentod, meaning mercy death, there was resistance to a state-administered program of mass killing of disabled citizens in some sectors of the community and parts of the medical profession. The historiography of the period has traditionally highlighted the central role played by the Catholic Church in Germany in resistance to the Krankenmorde. But the story is much more complex. The Catholic Church's contemporary account of its role in opposing the Action T4 program suggests it led widespread resistance and expressed resolute public indignation. While many of those who died in the Krankenmorde came from Catholic-run institutions in Germany, it has been argued that many further potential victims were saved by the intercession of Catholic clergy. Numerous senior Catholic figures are reported to have made impassioned ethical and legal-based arguments against the killings. In December 1940, Pope Pius XII spoke out specifically against the killing of the disabled. His 1943 encyclical Mystici Corporis Christi declared that, "Conscious of the obligations of our high office, we deem it necessary to reiterate this grave statement today, when, to our profound grief, we see at times the deformed, the insane, and those suffering from hereditary disease deprived of their lives as though they were a useless burden to society." The Catholic and Protestant churches in Germany were the main non-state providers of care for the sick and disabled, operating many asylums and care institutions. The Inner Mission was the national Protestant health and welfare organisation, operating more than 500 care institutions, although these did not tend to provide active treatment or any kind of clinical intervention to assist its mentally ill charges. Opposition to the Krankenmorde in the Protestant Church was, at most, sporadic. The relevant Catholic organisations in Germany came under the Caritas umbrella, and in general were more active in resisting the Nazis' plan. From the beginning, the Nazi regime was wary of the potential responses of the main Christian churches to their program of mass killing of the sick and disabled. In January 1939, KDF bureaucrat Viktor Brack, whose main responsibility would be the organization of the murder of patients, commissioned a report from Josef Mayer, a professor of moral theology at the University of Paderborn, seeking advice on the likely responses of the Catholic Church to the euthanasia program. Mayer opined that in the event of a state-controlled euthanasia program, the response of both the Catholic and Protestant churches would likely be one of acceptance if it were presented as being in the national interest. According to historian Michael Burley, some of the leadership of the relevant Catholic institutions entered into negotiations with T4 officials over procedural issues, such as administration of last rites to the prospective victims and whether victims' ashes could be offered Christian burial. It is probable that these kinds of responses emboldened Hitler in his decision to proceed with the implementation of the Krankenmord. Despite initial indications of potential acquiescence by local Christian churches to the Nazi regime's plans for the nation's sick and disabled, by late summer 1941, protests from senior Catholic clergy had caused concern for the KDF by creating unrest and resistance in numerous German communities. In March 1941, the Bishop of Berlin, Konrad von Preising, spoke out against the killing. In the months following, the words of Bishop of Münster, Clemens von Galen, would echo within and beyond Germany and lead to him being characterized as the true gadfly of the Krankenmord. Clemens August Graf von Galen was one of 13 children of Count Ferdinand Herbert von Galen of Westphalia. Clemens was Jesuit educated as a high school student and attended the Catholic University at Freiburg in Germany's southwest. After a visit to Rome in 1896, he decided to become a priest. He entered the seminary in Münster and was ordained in 1904, spending 2 decades in Berlin and volunteering for military service in the 1914-1918 war. Like many German ex-servicemen in the 1920s, von Galen seemed to endorse the stab-in-the-back legend and was horrified at both the collapse of the Kaiser's empire and the advent of political extremism in Germany in 1919. Von Galen had always identified as politically conservative and fiercely anti-Bolshevik. He was consecrated Bishop of Münster in 1933. Von Galen had a complicated relationship with the Nazi regime. He had preached against Nazi racial policy, although his statements were usually more a critique of the vacuous and intellectually dishonest rhetoric of the regime's racial ideologues, rather than a specific repudiation of the ideas of racial hygiene and anti-Semitism. In 1933, an agreement, or Concordat, between the Holy See and the German government guaranteed that both parties would not interfere in the affairs of the other. As the Nazi regime became more totalitarian, the 1933 Concordat started to break down, leading von Galen to directly assist Pope Pius XI in drafting the 1937 anti-Nazi papal encyclical Mit brennender Sorge, meaning with burning concern. Unlike other encyclicals written in Latin, Mit brennender Sorge was written in German and smuggled into Germany. In it, the Vatican condemned the Nazi-inspired pantheistic confusion, the neo-pagan myth of race and blood, the idolizing of the state, and the cult of the Führer. Yet, despite his criticism of many aspects of the Nazi project, Clemens von Galen remained a patriot and supported German military action against Poland and the Soviet Union. Von Galen is most famous for his 3 sermons in July and August 1941, speaking out against the apparent excesses of the Nazi regime. The third, directly addressing the T4 killings, was delivered in Münster's Lamberta-Kirche on 3 August 1941 and is frequently cited as the example of resistance of the Catholic Church to the Krankenmord. Von Galen was likely inspired when he learned that patients from a Catholic-run asylum in Marienthal, part of his diocese, were to be sent to their deaths. He began his famous sermon by quoting Luke chapter 19, verses 41 to 44, and provided the congregation with his interpretation of the passage that, in this instance, man was wrong in imposing his will over God. He declaimed, "These are people, our brothers and sisters. Maybe their life is unproductive, but productivity is not a justification for killing." Von Galen's sermon became inspirational to opponents of the Nazi regime, and he was dubbed the Lion of Münster. The text of the sermon was cited on BBC radio broadcasts to occupied Europe and dropped by the Royal Air Force as a propaganda leaflet among German troops. It is also likely that the sermon influenced the Scholl siblings, Sophie and Hans, and their White Rose anti-Nazi movement. Founded by a group of medical students in Munich in 1942, their non-violent resistance included spreading leaflets and graffiti to condemn Hitler and the atrocities of the Nazi government. Sophie, Hans, and a fellow student activist, Christoph Probst, were later caught and quickly tried and then beheaded in February 1943. Von Galen was more fortunate. His high public profile protected him against retribution by the regime, although Hitler had said that he would exact revenge after the war. Other, less well-known sources of Catholic resistance paid a severe penalty. Bernhard Lichtenberg, the provost of St. Hedwig's Cathedral in Berlin, used von Galen's sermon as the pretext to send a letter of protest to Leonardo Conti, the Reichsgesundheitsführer, meaning state health chief, on 26 August 1941. Citing the case of a mother who had told him of the sudden death of her son in a psychiatric institution, he demanded, "As a human being, a priest, and a German, that you answer for the crimes that have been perpetrated at your bidding or with your consent." Lichtenberg not only denounced the murder of patients, but also stood up for all those persecuted by the regime. He was arrested and sentenced to prison. After serving his sentence, the Gestapo had him transferred to a concentration camp. Sick and weakened by this time, Lichtenberg died in transit in 1943. The actions of Judge Lothar Kreisig provide one of the known examples of open resistance to the Krankenmorde by a member of the legal profession. Kreisig had been appointed a judge in Chemnitz, Germany, in 1928. After the National Socialists took government in 1933, he refused to join the Nazi Party, preferring to join the anti-Nazi Confessing Church. In 1937, he took up a judgeship in the Lower District Court of Brandenburg an der Havel, including primary responsibility for mental health guardianship and the welfare of disabled adults and children. Kreisig became concerned at the exponential growth in death certificates of those citizens and escalated his concerns to Franz Görtner, the Reich Minister of Justice. He then learnt of the T4 program and spoke out against its illegality. In a brave and optimistic ploy, Kreisig filed homicide charges against the KDF head Philippe Brûleur and filed further injunctions against the transfer of patients from institutions to various killing centres. Kreisig argued that Hitler's 1939 letter to Brandt and Brûleur was not law. Rather than withdraw his legal claims, Kreisig took an early retirement in 1942. There are also accounts of psychiatrists and senior medical officers resisting the murder or forced sterilisation of their patients. Carsten Jaspersen was the clinical director of the Catholic-run Bethel Sarepta Asylum in Bielefeld, in northwest of Germany. Jaspersen refused to cooperate with local authorities in the T4 program and incited his colleagues to either not participate in the registration of patients or to alter the clinical records to make their prognosis seem more favourable and prevent their selection for death. In other situations, psychiatrists may have inadvertently saved patients by misunderstanding the purpose of the T4 registration forms, believing instead they were part of a process of separating patients along clinical lines and therefore not assessing them for the gas chamber or, later, the luminal syringe. In 1940, Jaspersen instituted legal action against the T4 program and is credited as the one who prompted von Galen's concern and sermons by alerting him to the pending transport of patients from Marienthal to the killing centres. Karl Bonhoeffer, professor of psychiatry at Charité Hospital in Berlin, was the father of one of the best-known figures among Protestant resistors to Nazism, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Karl Bonhoeffer is known to have employed and protected Jewish colleagues and patients. While initially supporting the sterilisation programmes, Karl Bonhoeffer would later modify and reverse his position. His resistance included advising his son in his efforts to try and save the lives of asylum patients, among the many other anti-Nazi activities that led to Dietrich's execution in 1945, as well as providing valuable moral and professional support to his colleagues as they resisted the T4 program. The director of polyclinics at the Berlin Institute for Psychological Research and Psychotherapy, psychiatrist John Karl Friedrich Rittmeister, is a celebrated martyr of the Nazi period. Rittmeister had studied with influential psychoanalyst Carl Jung at the Berghülze Clinic in Zurich, but fell out with him over Jung's apparent allegiance to Hitler and his anti-Semitism. As a psychotherapist, Rittmeister was at odds with the views of many of his colleagues who saw mental illness as a biological phenomenon. Rittmeister is known to have hidden Jewish neighbours in Berlin after the Kristallnacht pogroms in November 1938, and later helped many Jewish Germans flee the Nazi regime. He is believed to have assisted directly with the saving of patients from the T4 gas chambers. Rittmeister was an acquaintance of Haro and Libertas Schulze-Boensen, organisers of the anti-Nazi resistance group the Rotkapelle, meaning Red Music Ensemble. In 1941, Rittmeister joined the organisation and co-authored Aegis leaflets, named after the Spartan king, condemning the atrocities of the regime. The Schulze-Boensens were arrested and executed in 1942. Rittmeister was executed in 1943. Psychiatrist Walter Kreutz was the chief medical officer in the administration of the Rhine province. In January 1941, he wrote a memorandum against the euthanasia measures and submitted it to the local governor, Heinz Hech. In March 1941, Kreutz convened a meeting to coordinate efforts to subvert the transport of patients to killing centres, which likely helped save the lives of 3,000 patients. Much of Kreutz's activities against the T4 program only emerged in evidence presented to the Dusseldorf euthanasia trial, 1948-50, resulting in Kreutz being acquitted of complicity to murder. Gottfried Ewald, director of the state hospital and nursing home at the University Clinic for Psychiatry in Göttingen, refused outright to cooperate with the T4 program. He helped save potential victims by arranging urgent discharges from asylums, referring patients to other institutions and altering patient files. In mid-1940, Ewald wrote a comprehensive critique against the Krankenmorde, which he sent to the T4 medical office. The 1941 diary of Ernst Alt, an Austrian psychiatrist working in the Feldhof Hospital in Vienna, provides an insight into the motivations and resistance of some psychiatrists to the T4 program. Alt's musings begin with a series of statements indicating his anger at the murder of patients and his profound disdain for the pseudoscience of eugenics. He notes that some of the great Germans who were afflicted by mental illness, such as Friedrich Nietzsche, would likely not have survived the program. He criticises the argument of incurability as being deeply flawed, as it is possible that in the future there may be treatment that may in fact cure. He documented his numerous representations to the Feldhof's clinic director, disagreeing with the transportation of patients to the killing centre at Hartheim, and records instances he contacted families and advised them to take their relatives home to prevent them being killed. This practice, he noted, led to his being banned from using the telephone in the clinic. In other instances, psychiatrists seem compelled to a form of plea bargaining, where the lives of some patients were sacrificed to save others. In one case, Leipzig professor Gerhard Schorsch had compromised with T4 officials by designing a spectrum of productivity ranging from vegetative existences to very good performance, leading to the salvation of some of those condemned by the T4 committee's assessors, but at the expense of other patients, sacrificed to satisfy the local health authorities. In the eyes of the Holocaust scholar Michael Berenbaum, this kind of process created a moral equivalence between these physicians and the Judenrat, meaning Jewish leadership in the ghettos, who horse-traded the lives of some Jews to save others from deportation to extermination camps. Despite the efforts of the Nazi regime to disguise the T4 program, the German population became increasingly aware of what was happening. The Dresden academic Viktor Klemperer, whose diaries are an invaluable account of life in Germany under the Weimar and Nazi years, wrote on 22 August 1941, "Frau Paul talks in despair about her mother, 89, who is showing signs of senile dementia. I cannot put her in a hospital, she'll be killed there. There is widespread talk now of the killing of the mentally ill in the asylums." The SD reported that many patients refused to attend health appointments out of fear of being killed by their doctors. American journalist William L. Shira released accounts of the mercy killings of Germans with disabilities in periodicals such as Life and Reader's Digest, and through his journal Berlin Diary, all published in 1941. Diplomatic reports of the murders also reached the US government before its entry into the war in December 1941. The SD also noted an incident in the Bavarian town of Habsburg in which citizens had resisted the deportation to the gas chambers of disabled residents from the Attian institution. There is an, admittedly disputed, account of Hitler himself being assailed by a crowd at the railway station in the town of Hof, also in Bavaria. Hitler's private train had stopped there whilst en route from Munich to Berlin, at the same time as a group of condemned asylum patients were being loaded onto a train to be transported to their deaths. Disturbed by what they were witnessing and realising the arrival of Hitler's entourage, an angry crowd is reported to have gathered around the train and jeered the Führer. The T4 killing centre at Grafenegg was closed after reports of protest had reached Viktor Brack of the KDF. On 25 November 1940, an aristocrat, Else von Lürs of Mena, herself a committed Nazi and leader of the women's Nazi movement, wrote to the wife of a presiding judge of the Nazi Party court, "Undoubtedly you know about the measures currently used by us to dispose of incurable mental patients. Still, perhaps you do not fully realise the manner and the scope of this, nor the horror it creates in the people's minds." Here in Württemberg, the tragedy takes place in Grafenegg, on the Alb, as a result of which the name of that place has taken on an ominous meaning. Himmler received a copy of the letter in December 1940 and wrote to Viktor Brack, "I hear there is great excitement on the Alb due to the institution Grafenegg. The population recognises the grey automobile of the SS and think they know what is going on at the constant smoking of the crematory. What happens there is a secret and yet is no longer one. Thus, the worst feeling has arisen there, and in my opinion, there remains only one thing, to discontinue the use of the institution at this place." The sense of disquiet and increasing rumours within the community presented a problem for Brack, who then ordered the cessation of operations at both Grafenegg and Brandenburg killing centres. Not deterred, the T4 organisation commissioned two more killing centres, at Hadamar and Bernburg, to become operational by late 1940. Any patients from Grafenegg's previous catchment were sent to their deaths at the already operating Hartheim killing centre. After murdering more than 70,000 people, the Nazi regime halted Aktion T4 at the end of August 1941. While the regime was troubled by the sporadic protests of the Catholic Church and others, a more significant concern was public unrest at a time when Germany was escalating the war against the Soviet Union. However, the end of Aktion T4 would not mean the end of the Krankenmorde, as the intentional murder of patients would be continued by other means, and to a much larger extent. The clandestine killing process now entered a phase that has come to be known as Dezentrale Anstaltentotungen, meaning decentralised euthanasia. To conceal this new form of murder, the method was changed where, instead of carbon monoxide, lethal doses of medicine combined with starvation were used to kill patients. Now the responsibility of medical and nursing staff, the Krankenmorde took place in more than 30 different state hospitals, including Am Steinhof, Eichberg, Elglinghaar, Großschweidnitz, Hadamar, Kalmenhof, Ersi, Meseritz-Oberalde, and Gallheilandstadt-Tiegenhof. At the same time, the scope of those to be murdered was expanded to include the frail and elderly, forced labourers who had fallen ill, and soldiers suffering from disabling illness or combat injuries. These would soon be among the nearly 87,000 victims of decentralised euthanasia. At the hospital in Kaufbeuren-Ersi in Bavaria, psychiatrist Valentin Faldhauser developed a diet essentially free of any nutritional value, called the E-cost, to be fed to patients who had no work capacity and were condemned to die. At Elglinghaar Hospital near Munich, the clinical director and psychiatrist Hermann Farnmüller established Hungerhouses in buildings 22 and 25 of the institution. Patients selected for death were fed decreasing amounts of food in a diet that was deficient in protein and fat. Van Müller insisted that the starving patients were weighed on a regular basis, and he was vigilant in preventing staff sneaking fat or protein into the condemned patients' rations. More than 400 people died in Van Müller's hunger houses. In the many patient files from Elgfing Ha from that time, now stored in the main Bavarian State Archive in Munich, Van Müller's red pencil notations usually indicated that the person had died by starvation. Van Müller would later provide evidence for the defence in the Nuremberg doctors' trial. He was arrested by US forces in 1948, convicted, and in November 1949 was sentenced to 6 years' prison for his role in the euthanasia deaths at Elgfing Ha. Meseritz Oberwalde, in what is now Western Poland, became one of the most prolific killing institutions, where approximately 10,000 people were murdered. Patients were selected for death not only on grounds of work incapacity, but also for disobeying hospital rules or trying to escape. It is estimated that 97% of patients sent to Meseritz Oberwalde were murdered there. The institution's medical director, Walter Grabowski, implemented harsh working conditions for nursing staff, which seemed to add to the brutality of their behaviour towards patients. Grabowski's fate is unknown, although he likely committed suicide in 1945. Victims of Meseritz Oberwalde also came from other European countries, and at least one US citizen died there. The institution's head nurse, Amanda Ratachak, admitted to killing more than 1,500 people with overdoses of morphine and scopolamine. She was tried and executed by the Soviets in May 1945. The mass murder of disabled children by luminal injection in Kinderfachtabteilungen, meaning children's wards, continued until the end of the war. As will be examined in the following chapters, by late 1944, more than 10,000 people, mainly sick and weak prisoners from concentration camps, would also be murdered by carbon monoxide gas in former T4 killing centres in what was termed Sonderbehandlung, meaning special treatment, 14F13. Throughout the war, to free up hospital beds, more than 80,000 psychiatric patients were murdered by the SS or Wehrmacht, or were starved to death in hospitals in the occupied territories. From the time of Hitler's 1939 order authorising certain doctors to decide who among the sick and disabled were to die, it is estimated that 300,000 people were killed in the Krankenmorde.